Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Well, good morning and possibly good afternoon for all of our listeners who have called in, and we have a wonderful show today. Our topic is understanding culture competence, and our guest is Sahar Andrade, and she has Sahar Andrade Consulting, and I'm so pleased to have her here. Good morning to you, Sahar.
Good morning, Cecile.
Ah, it's so wonderful. You know, we're going to be covering for our listeners, we're covering a few areas, not only culture competence, but generations, and there's some interesting things there, as well as respect. And where is respect in the workplace today? So let's get started right away. When we look at culture competence, I'd like you, if you would, Sahar, to kind of define and clarify what that means.
Absolutely. Culture competence is basically knowing that there are other cultures that are different from ours, the one that we have, and accept that there are differences. And here it's important to say that accepting and agreeing are two different things. Just accepting that there are differences, and it's okay. Culture competence doesn't mean that you need to be a specialist or you need to know everything there is to know about every other culture that exists in the world. I don't think that anyone can do that. But it's just about knowing that there are differences and expect that there are differences and looking at the differences rather in a positive way that bring us together rather than can separate us from each other because of these differences. So cultural competence is basically accepting differences.
Accepting differences. And, you know, it seems that many of our diversity trainers or people who handle diversities talk about it as having a tolerance. There's a tolerance that's part of the culture competence, and there's an acceptance that's required. So how are tolerance and acceptance defined in our workplace today?
Absolutely. First of all, yes, the word tolerance is used a lot when people talk about diversity. And it, just by definition, tolerance meaning is basically putting up with someone. And I'm not sure that if anyone likes the feeling to be put up with rather than being accepted. And it's important to accept people as they are, not as we want them to be. Because as human beings, we tend to put people in boxes and we think it's okay, but we don't accept that to be done to us or we don't like it. So I'd rather be accepted than tolerated. So acceptance is basically, again, it's accepting that there are differences, not necessarily agreeing with the differences, but accepting that there are differences and be okay with it.
And how do we as individuals, you know, we have people that come in from other cultures that are very different from our cultures, and how do we let them know that we're more than tolerant of them, but that we're accepting who they are? How do we really talk to them to say, how am I going to accept you? Does that make sense?
Yes, to a degree. And I will say, for example, we need, first of all, when we deal with people that are diverse, meaning that they are different than who we are, we need to remember one thing, that people do things that make sense to them. It might not make sense to you.
You're right.
So people that are different are not wrong and are not weird. They're just different. There are little things that people do because this is what they know. This is the best they got exposed to. And we need to understand that we come from different countries, different ethnic backgrounds, different cultures, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different educational backgrounds, different job backgrounds, different even thought backgrounds. That is part of our diversity. And when we do something, we do it because it's logical to us. And we need to understand that, as Brenda Burchard always says, common logic is not necessarily common practice. And what is logic to one person or in one culture might be totally different in another culture. In order for us to make people understand that we accept them, or at least we do not have a problem with who they are or what they do, is watching our body language, watching the way we talk, the words that we use. You know, there is the power of words that we use to let people know that they are accepted and valued for who they are. And if we are not sure about something before we jump to conclusion, before we let our perceptions judge our decisions on how to deal or our judgment about these people, is to respectfully ask them.
Yes.
You know, for example, in having someone at work that eats something different, that smells in a different way, instead of telling them, "Oh my God, that smells different, what are you eating?" we can tell them, "Oh, I've never had anything like that before. What are you eating?" You know, it's the same thing. It's different words and different way of saying it. Instead of embarrassing someone, just go out of your way to ask respectfully, and people will be very happy to share with you who they are, what are their beliefs and their values, because at that time they feel that you have a genuine interest in getting to know who they are as people and as human beings.
Yes, and that gives them also an opportunity to ask us about ourselves.
Exactly.
Because many times we just assume they're going to know who we are. We're here, we're in the United States, and we have these companies and all those things. And many times we make the assumption that they'll know who we are without even them asking. And yet we must stay open.
Exactly. And why? And some people don't see the connection between this and between how it applies in organizations. It's a very simple correlation. When people feel valued, they give you value back, they become engaged, you have great teamwork, you have harmony, you have productivity that will add to basically your bottom line dollar value revenue. And this is the direct correlation. It's about employee engagement. If you don't have that employee engagement and people feel that they are not engaged, basically, and this is what the Gallup research showed in 2010, that we have only less than maybe 50%, we have 28% that actively disengaged, and only less than 30% that are engaged, and the difference between both are disengaged. And actively disengaged is actually when people are becoming toxic to the workplace. So in order for us to avoid that and to avoid people that are disengaged, that don't have harmony, absenteeism, turnover, even discrimination lawsuits, we need to start valuing people for who they are and accept them to increase their engagement in the workplace and increase productivity.
Yes, and your points are very well taken. And actually my next question is that there's all kinds of studies and opinions regarding diversity, inclusion. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, based on working with some companies, is diversity the only existence now? Or is there, because they're not working with inclusion, are we still in a relationship that diversity and inclusion come together?
Thank you. Companies not thinking
about it? Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for asking this question. Actually, it's a crucial question to always be in our mind. Let's start with the definition of diversity, because most people, the diversity is only about color and religion and ethnicity.
Right.
But diversity goes way beyond that. Diversity meaning is basically, it has to do, yes, with race, ethnicity, religion, it has to do with age. That's why generations, that is a huge issue in the workplace today, is part of diversity. It has to do with sexual orientation. You know, we need to remember that June is Gay Pride Month. So, you know, it's part of diversity. It's about disabilities that are visible and invisible. It's about parental status, military status, veteran status, socioeconomic, blue-collar job, white-collar job. It's about our education, about geographical place. I mean, I can go on and on and on, and definitely the diversity of thoughts. So when we start talking about diversity alone without inclusion, and inclusion meaning looking at our differences in a positive way and putting them in consideration when we put the guidelines and we put the principles to any organization, diversity without inclusion will actually be part of exclusion. So inclusion and diversity are, I call them the two faces of a coin. They need to go hand in hand. And only 10 years ago, the diversity practitioners started talking, maybe 10, 15 years, talking about the correlation between diversity and inclusion. And they have to go hand in hand. If not, diversity is not going to work. Diversity is not the glitchy word that, an organization puts in a website. It has to be within the threats of an organization. It has to be part of the mission, of the vision, of the goals of an organization. It has to become even part of the performance evaluation for managers, for it to become alive and actually not the nice things to do, but actually the right thing to do for any business to thrive.
Right, and I think it's primary that people understand what you're discussing, what we are discussing this entire program morning. And it's so important that we don't just tolerate people, we accept them. And so often when there's a different kind of culture going about, that many times what fails in companies is accepting and not focusing on tolerating.
Exactly. We need to remember that every organization has two kinds of customers. It has internal customers or their employees and external customers with basically the people that buy our services. I have never seen an organization that has external customers happy if their internal customers are not. So we need to make sure that our employees are taken care of because they are our number one asset. If they're not happy, if they don't feel valued, again, and I keep repeating that, I know, but this is the bread and butter of diversity. It's like we need to value people for who they are, not who we want them to be. As human beings, we go to workplaces not only to make a paycheck, but also we need to have that feeling that we are contributing to work, to community, to society. We need to feel that we are serving a bigger purpose than who we are. And we can only do that when we feel that we are valued, that we belong, that once we feel belong, we are engaged and our productivity goes up, and that's how we can make revenues for our workplaces.
Yes, and I want to ask one more question before we move on into generations is, why does culture competence matter? A matter of compliance we're dealing with? What?
Actually, cultural compliance and diversity and acceptance are not a diversity is not a compliance issue. It's not Title VII, and it's not protected groups, and it's not a box that you mark on a form, on an HR application form. It's not about being politically correct. It's not about black and white, and it's not about meritocracy, and it's not about who's right and who's wrong, and it's not about shame or guilt. Actually, diversity is about the unique characteristics of who we are as human beings and what we bring to our life and to the lives of others. And it's about acceptance and not tolerance. So this is it's very important that you look around you wherever you go and look how diverse people are. And once we pull all these differences of problem solving, of looking at things in different ways. And we bring all these assets of thought diversity together to be a tool for innovation and creativity and more power and reaching more customer base to increase our productivity as an organization. We're not, as an organization, they will never reach the level of competence and of revenues and of success that they can.
Yes, and the bottom line to all of that is we have to be open.
Absolutely. Yeah. Open-minded, yes.
Even open, you're right-minded. And before we go into generations, would you let those that are listening perhaps know how they might contact you, whether it's your email address or a phone number or both? And I know you have a website. So would you share this with them?
With pleasure. Thank you, Cecile, for this. My email address is Sahar, it's S as in Sam, A-H-A-R, at saharconsulting.com. My website is www.saharconsulting.com. It's www.saharconsulting.com. My phone number is 818-861-9434. 818.
Thank you.
861-9434. Thank you.
Sure. So those of you, write that down, and if you'd like to contact her for other questions and other things that she does, you'll have that opportunity. So let's talk about the generations. Why all the talk about generational gaps these days? What has changed?
Well, actually, nothing changed. Few things changed. Let's put it that way. All of a sudden, you know, it's my favorite subject, by the way. All of a sudden, in the U.S. workforce, we don't have only four generations that work side by side, but we are starting to have five generations that work side by side. And it happened for a lot of reasons. It happened because the scientific research over the last few decades have allowed people to live longer and healthier. And people are more aware on how to be healthy with exercise, with different kind of foods that they have, and they live longer. And because they live longer, they want to be more of service to their community and their society, so they keep working. This is one reason. The other reason is the economic downturn that we went through a few years ago, and a lot of people have lost their savings, their 401k, and they're still working because they need that revenue, and also they want insurance, medical insurance for what they are. So all of a sudden, before we had different generations on the social level, but now we have them actually in the workplace. We have the traditionalist, which is the oldest generation. Then we have the baby boomers, and we have the Gen X. We have Gen Y, or the millennials. And now we're starting having the Gen Z, which is the new generation, or we call them the I generation right now.
Yes, and, you know, why do each generation act, behave, and have more or less the same behaviors? How does that come together as one?
Well, in order for us to understand why every generation acts the way they do, we need to visit first of all, let's define a generation. A generation is a group of people are sharing the same era, that meaning that they share the same social, political, economical factors that happened during that era. And usually a generation is within a span of 20 years, but and I know that a lot of people define generation by a beginning year and an ending year, but these years are not really a law. They are very flexible because still recently we believe that Gen Y are up to the year 2000, you know, or past 2000. But now with the new researches, they found out that actually it ends in 1995. And why they based this on, because millennials, what is the biggest event that really affected their life is 9/11. So if you were 4 or 5 years old when 9/11 happened, it didn't really change your life, but it became part of your history. But if millennials, when they were like maybe early teenager years, it actually changed their whole life. And that's why we see them, most of the military staff, or a lot of military staff, I'm not going to say most, are people that are millennials, because this is all they know. They grew up in an era that had two wars, you know, very patriotic, you know, and they were in, they went to ministry because of that. So we need to know the era every generation lived in. And to be very quick, for example, traditionalists were in the era of the Great Recession, the Mundial War, and because of that, they follow the leadership in military style. Because it was a recession, they are kind of frugal, and if a company gives them a job, it became they worked for it till the end of their life because they were very loyal, because it was someone that helped them put food on the table for their family. When we come to baby boomers, they were huge in numbers, and that's why they worked and worked and worked, and it became part of workaholic was the first time that we started hearing that, and it became a lot of competition, and that's why they called them the me generation, where it was about them and about their status and achievements. But we need also to remember that during the baby boomers, it was the civil rights day. They stopped the Vietnam War, so they were the first people that actually challenged leadership for a better society. Also, we come to Gen X, and we call the Gen X the sandwich generation, because it's a small numbers. It's because it's women got their working rights for baby boomers, and they worried more about their careers, and that's why the Gen X numbers are very reduced, and they are between huge two-generation baby boomers and the millennials. And they lived, because they were lived with parents that worked all the time, workaholic, they grew up as what we call the latchkey kids. They grew up on their own, and that's why most entrepreneurs are basically Gen X. And also, even in TV, we saw the sitcoms that became like Seinfeld and Friends, because it was about friends living together than family actually living together. And because of that, they became helicopter parents for the Gen Y or the millennials, and that's why they basically set everything for the kids, millennials, like time for school, homework, baseball or football, and then dance, and then homework, and then go to bed and start the day again. And then we accuse poor millennials of short attention span when we actually created that. You know, and then we also always told millennials, you know, you are the best, you can do whatever you want. And all of a sudden, you know, if you go to a competition and they are the 11th person that came on that competition, we say give them a ribbon, you know, and then we accuse them to feel entitled. So it's a long discussion about millennials, and I think they have, they are brilliant, you know, if we know how to work with them, if we become coaches for them like their parents, because they like instant gratification, and if we include that into the management style or their managers, where they really care about them, they make them advance and care about their careers, they can actually include the millennials in the workplace, because they have huge numbers, and they already 55 million in the workplace, and in 10 years that can constitute 75% of the workplace. And Gen Z are already in the workplace. You know, from 95 till now, they're already in the workplace.
Yes, and
so this is a quick overview.
Sure, and I really appreciate that, I'm sure. And then as we talk about the last part of this is respect, because we've got all these various generations. And one of the things, part of it's millennials perhaps, but it's also this younger generation coming in. So many of them are mixed races. They automatically come in, and I've been doing some research on a lot of that, and it's amazing that many times companies are saying, how do we handle mixed races? And it's almost a silly question to ask, because it's very obvious. And so if I were asking you that question, how would you handle that?
You mean respect? How to handle respect in the workplace?
The respect and regarding mixed races.
Mixed races. Okay, first of all, the word respect meaning that you're basically giving, you are valuing people for different reasons. And respect is different between cultures. So we need, for example, there are cultures that give someone respect right away automatically because of their age, of their job title or position or their authority level. You know, but also whatever we are missing now in the workplace is the respect or basically valuing other people that are different, either for their age, and we see that a lot. You know, they look at the millennials and they say, oh, they feel entitled, you know, they don't have loyalty for the work, they don't have ethics, and it's not true. They're just a different generation. It's part of the diversity. I mean, in every group there are individual differences, so I'm not saying that none of them are bad or none of them is good. In every generation, like in every culture, there are different individual differences. So respect has to go from the oldest to the youngest and from the youngest to the oldest. It has to go from, like we talked in the beginning of the show, about acceptance of differences and maybe giving the time to understand people and asking questions respectfully. It's about including people, about having an open-minded, about like moving away from ethnocentrism, where we think our culture is the best culture and my way or the highway, and if you don't act the way I act, you're wrong, and if you're different, you're weird, and if you don't believe in my values, you don't have any values. We need to start changing our perceptions, because perceptions might be realities for us, but they're not the reality. Perceptions is how we see the world. It's the lens that we have that we see the world, but we usually forget that other people have different lenses. And we need to start respecting that.
And I appreciate that. We're getting down to the very end here. And one of the things I want to make sure our listeners are able to do is, would you give them at least your phone number and website once again?
Thank you so much, Cecile. The website is www.saharconsulting.com. Sahar is S as in Sam, A-H-A-R. The phone number is 818-861-9434.
Very good. Thank you so much. And before we leave, ladies and gentlemen, on the phone is our leading lady next week, the Debbie Wright. And she's owner of Motec Auto Care. And her topic's going to be the 3 P's of business breakthroughs: purpose, people, and profits. So you may want to put that on your calendar and be able to listen to Debbie Wright. She's got a lot of good information for everyone. And thank you so much, Sahar Andrade, for being a part of this. And ladies and gentlemen, have a blessed week.
Thank you, Cecile.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.